I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Rugby, rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass. Oh!
Good morning or good afternoon, the 42 members. Welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly Extra. Gavin Casey here in studio in Dublin. And good evening to Murray Kinsella in Japan. How are you, Murray?
Yeah, good. Had a lovely day. Actually got a couple hours away from the laptop and had a bit of a tour around the city here. Really nice. Loads of temples and nice food and stuff. So yeah, saw a bit more of that side of it, which was great. But got back just in time for the Scotland-Russia game there, and then it certainly went very much in Scotland's favour, and they probably did as much as they could have expected to beforehand.
Yeah, I saw your colleague from the Irish Independent, Cian Tracy, tweeting that he'd seen Gregor Townsend at a temple which had a wishing well of some sort in the middle of it. And, you know, as you say, Scotland got the job done. They keep themselves alive, and they'll be hoping, above all hopes, that they can see off Japan now as well on Sunday. But they're now 19 points ahead of Ireland on points difference, which could factor into things if we were to slip up against Samoa, slip up, i.e. not win with a bonus point. That would mean that Scotland would still have to beat Japan with a bonus point, but who knows? I mean, if that game's an absolute shootout, as we've always predicted it would be, then that's not inconceivable. So just talk us through the permutations. Say, what happens if there's a three-way tie at the top of the pool, if all of the teams finish on the same number of match points?
Yeah, I guess that's a realistic scenario. I suppose before we say anything, Ireland get a bonus point on Saturday against Samoa, then they put themselves in a lot more comfortable position. If they don't, then they have to worry about this scenario where potentially everyone in, or rather the three teams can finish on 15 match points. So Ireland win without a bonus point, they finish on 15. Scotland beat Japan with a bonus point, they finish on 15. But Japan get a losing bonus point and they're also on 15. In that scenario, the winner of the pool is decided on points difference. So Scotland now have that in their favour, I guess. And if they're going to beat Japan with it, or sorry, if they give up a losing bonus point, then they'll only have obviously a narrow gap over Japan in that game. So Ireland, even without getting a bonus point, could potentially have made up that gap there. So it really is going to come down to the wire in this sense. But the second place in the pool in that scenario would be decided by head to head. So say if Scotland were to top the pool, then Ireland and Japan would be on the same points, but Japan would go through because they beat Ireland in that game. So that's a fascinating and maybe worrying scenario from Ireland's point of view. There is obviously other permutations and it can go a different way. But I guess from Ireland's point of view is get that try scoring bonus point, win with as big a margin as you can, and try and completely take it out of the other team's hands and just worry about them trading blows on the final day. The other scenario, I guess, is Scotland winning without a bonus point and denying Japan a losing bonus point, and they both finish on 14. Ireland would hope to have already got their bonus point, and or even a win in that scenario would let them be on 15 points. And in that case, Scotland would go through at the expense of Japan because their head-to-head is better. So there's a number of ways it can work out, really. And Scotland have probably done a decent job of putting themselves into that position. 61-0 today. They probably could add another couple of scores. Two of them were disallowed when maybe they'll regret the final pass. Certainly a couple of forward passes and a couple of jittery kind of knock-ons as they were really trying to chase that score. They did well to score early in the second half. They were only, 21-0, the same as Ireland at halftime. And then they scored early in the second half. And Russia really, at this stage, were running on fumes. You kind of had to feel for them because they've been really hardy and resilient in this World Cup. But you could see the fatigue taking a major toll on them. And there wasn't much resistance there in the end. But it really does shape it up so nicely in Pool A. And realistically, coming into this World Cup, I don't think too many of us were expecting Pool A to deliver this kind of final weekend. The perception probably from long way out for Ireland was that, wow, this is a really great pool for them. And obviously it's worked out a lot more difficult, and that's great obviously for the tournament. It's a little bit more stressful obviously for Joe Schmidt.
It'll be a lot more stressful, for example, if, to play devil's advocate, we didn't get a bonus point against Samoa on Saturday, and then you're waiting on Japan and Scotland to face off on a Sunday. You've got a full kind of 24-hour turnaround where your fate isn't exactly in your own hands. And yeah, as you say, like when we were teeing up the tournament, when anybody was previewing the tournament, we couldn't have really foreseen this to be the case. And it does add an awful lot in the suspense stakes and excitement stakes. All of those permutations taken into consideration, then we're kind of none the wiser still as to who Ireland would face in a prospective quarterfinal. It could be the All Blacks, it could be South Africa. I thought it was interesting to hear some of Razzy Erasmus's thoughts on that. If they were to play Ireland, that he would be nervous because he knows the Irish players so well. Whereas, of course, we would have been arguing on the other side that because he and Jack Nienaber and Felix Jones know the Ireland players so well, it would have been an advantage to South Africa. Is he just kind of, I don't know, doffing the cap a little bit out of politeness?
Yeah, I think he was trying to be honest enough with his answer. Yeah, we did mention on the podcast yesterday, I think it was yesterday, there's so many podcasts, it kind of blends in, but that Joe Schmidt would feel he has, maybe he can get one over on South Africa in the fact that they do know about him and they'll expect certain things and he can change that picture and throw something at them that they're not quite expecting. Maybe the familiarity won't be an ideal as it is perceived to be in many quarters. Yeah, Razzy was asked about it after they put away Canada and secured their quarterfinal. He did say, listen, I think your question is very loaded to the journalist who asked. And he said, if I say one thing, I'll be in trouble. I say another thing, I'll be in trouble. But then he went on to say, listen, Joe Schmidt's an excellent coach. I know the players really well. They'll be a big threat and I'll be nervous if we played them. He then went on to say Japan are a much bigger threat than people think they are. And he said they were excellent in the Pacific Nations Cup and obviously beating Ireland, as well as their support and that momentum that they have, the wave they're kind of riding now. He did give a little shout out for Scotland potentially sneaking in there as well, and kind of finished up by mentioning the typhoon, which could obviously affect, now it looks like, the other games further up the country in Yokohama and Tokyo. So he wasn't quite saying he's quaking his boots thinking about playing Ireland there, and there probably are real challenges of playing Japan, although the deeper they go into the competition, you're not sure if it's going to be that momentum that carries them or if a certain fatigue builds in and they suffer in that sense. Yeah, the whole Munster, Ireland, Razzy, Jacques Nienaber, and all those connections and Felix Jones adding to it, that is a really fascinating scenario, and who knows which way it will go. Yeah, they'll feel they understand which players are going to make which decisions, what are their preferences in terms of technical things like fending, etc., tackling on certain shoulders, how they reset into a defensive line, how they kick chase, and all those little details that go into making the playbook and coaches deciding on which moves to use when and which and players as well in the kind of phase play. But again, Joe Schmidt will feel like, okay, I think Felix Jones knows this play. What if I tweak this one? What if I've shown the kind of hand with using that classic play to put Rob Kearney through for a try against Russia? We run a pattern that alludes to you going that way, and then you throw a little wrinkle on that, and you maybe go back to the scrum half on the loop, and suddenly there's space on the edge out there because they've tucked in around the ruck, worrying about the fullback coming into that space. So that is fascinating, and how it works out, who knows? But yeah, certainly Razzy will have his own concerns about Ireland, as he should. I mean, yeah, the last couple of performances haven't been great, but they've shown they can beat anyone.
Yeah, I wondered earlier on in a previous podcast as to whether Jones teaming up with South Africa, the significance of that was overstated somewhat, given Razzy and Nienaber would have had access to a lot of what Schmidt was doing. But then when I saw Razzy reach back for that high five to Jones yesterday, it did send a chill down my spine, I have to say. There's a question here from Eric Fitzgerald in the WhatsApp group. He asks, Murray, can you see anything from our last three games that would lead you to believe that we have any hope of beating either the Box or the ABs?
That's a pessimistic note.
That's a loaded question, Eric.
Yeah, as Razzy would say. Yeah, I absolutely can. I think there's obviously concerns for Ireland in losing to Japan and underperforming, I still feel, against Russia, while also getting the result they needed there. But there has been, look at their defence for starters. It's been really excellent so far in this competition. And I know Andy Farrell said in the press conference the other day, he wouldn't really give a shit if they conceded 100 points by now, if they had three wins on the board and they were fully in control of that pool. He wouldn't care how many points they've conceded, but only 22 points conceded is impressive. And they've been disciplined and they've made good decisions and they've actually defended well against the opposition set piece attack. Now, obviously that goes up another massive notch if you're going into a quarter final, but it is a real strength for Ireland, and it has been in some of their biggest wins. They've been able to shut down the All Blacks. They've been able to shut down some really good attacks. And I think they'd be confident of doing that against, say, the Box. I think they'd have to take confidence if they're playing the All Blacks that they've done that before and been able to limit their, as you mentioned, their transition attack opportunities. So that's one for starters. Just mentioned Rob Kearney's try there. I think some of the set piece stuff from Ireland has been really, really sharp. You even think of how they went into the strong lead against Japan. That's largely built on the back of really good strikes off line out. The first one was Gary Ringrose going back down the blind. They sneak him down there, a move they'd used against New Zealand in November. Really clever play to take them into position, and then they win an advantage and go to the kick. The second try was also built on something clever. They kind of maul it in close. They play a little, almost a loop kind of tight to the maul, and then they go to the width, and Stockdale is wide. He doesn't make a clean line break, but it's suddenly stretching the Japan defense, and again a kick finishes it off. So they're just two examples. The Kearney one, obviously there's been some nice little maul plays as well. You think of CJ Sander slipping Andrew Conway into that space against Russia and getting the return offload. Possibly could have passed pre-contact there, but they get a big line break and they're downfield again. So I think they'll be confident in how that side of it is going, and we know that's a huge strength for this Ireland team. The rest of it, like from their point of view, again, I think we can be critical on the outside, and there have been big moments they've lost, but from their point of view, their line out, for example, has largely been really good. They obviously had the two big losses against Japan, but they had some brilliant wins in there as well. And their kicking game, they'll look at examples like Sexton rolling that kick through for Peter O'Mahony as a prime example of what they can do in that sense, or Carty's kicking, obviously teeing up several tries at this stage. So there are good bits in all aspects of their play, and the defence and set-piece attack are two real core pillars. And for Ireland, they look to be in pretty good nick.
Yeah, I think it's four tries they've scored so far from kicks, and hopefully a couple more to come on Saturday. A question here from Owen DC. Do you think Joe Schmidt will base his team selection for the quarterfinal? I'm going to throw in potential quarterfinal there. Around physicality, yeah. If we get South Africa, for example, could you see the likes of Klein and Chris Farrell getting the nod purely for their size?
Yeah, I like your language there, because I'm sure Samoa would love all the talk about whether Ireland are going to get a bonus point or not when they just have to win the game first. That's an interesting one as well. I think that would be a straightforward presumption, definitely, because the Box are so physical, because they have such beasts really up front as well. To be honest, I can't see Chris Farrell probably starting that game, and I can't see Jean Klein starting that game. It may be part of Joe Schmidt's master plan, but you look at those positions, just as two examples, I think the second row pairing of Ryan and Henderson, presuming they're fit, if Ireland do get into that quarterfinal, it looks hard to break them up at this point. They've been good and they complement each other. In the centres, you know, there's a real debate now about who the starting centres are, but you're probably more focusing on Aki, Henshaw and Ringrose. Obviously, Henshaw's back this weekend and he'll probably pair up with Aki, you would presume, and Ringrose haven't played all three games and played really excellently, watches on and wonders about who Schmidt's ideal preference is. You think there that maybe their physicality against the Box would be useful, but on the flip side, Ringrose's ability to break the game and use his footwork and passing and be an intelligent defender, that's useful against anyone, no matter how big they are. And I don't know, Ireland loved, and Joe Schmidt loves talking down the size of his team, and it is a bit of a kind of team around them, but for me, they're a pretty big, powerful team. You know, obviously missing Dan Levy, but when they were on top in 2018, they were dominating teams physically, and that was some big teams like England and even Wales and obviously the All Blacks. So I don't know. I don't fully buy into the idea that the guys who, like Ringrose, for example, aren't capable of dealing with that physicality. But yeah, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, there was a question from Ian about Ireland's best midfield combo, but because we have so many questions this morning or this evening your time, I'm going to take that as your answer as to that for the moment, and we might come back to it on another occasion. One here from Mirren, who is always concerned for your welfare, but on this occasion is concerned for the player's welfare. She says, Schmidt is obviously very intense in how he coaches and the environment that he creates in camp. Could this be counterproductive in longer tournaments as the players have less chance of a break and the pressure and the atmosphere intensifies?
Yeah, I actually think the last week, kind of half week, has been brilliant from Ireland's point of view. They got the luck of having a weekend off during a World Cup, which, you know, obviously they didn't like their 6-day and 5-day turnarounds, but to have a full weekend off was just a godsend for the players at the exact right time. There was a bit of a toll physically and mentally even, and they really enjoyed themselves in Fukuoka. There were guys off surfing, off doing their own things, even just chilling out and strolling around the city without the stress of having to come back and do a review meeting or do a training session. Now, some of them who didn't play in the Russia game did a few top-ups, but even Jacob Sokja said he really enjoyed getting to do that and not have another game kind of weighing on him physically in that sense. Also, in the last couple of days, I know some of their partners have come out. I think Keane Healy was surprised on his birthday by his wife, and obviously that's a massive thing for any individual, not just a rugby player. So I think they'll have really boosted their spirits, whoever has been lucky enough to get that visit. And generally, I have to say, like, chatting with a couple of them, even outside the pressers, they are really enjoying this. The kind of pace of life here in Fukuoka isn't quite as manic as, say, Yokohama or Tokyo. So they have definitely had a bit of a breather in that sense. But, like, listen, Joe Schmidt has to keep the pressure on. That is part of the environment in a professional rugby team. He's got to keep pressure on players. He's got to keep them ferociously competing against each other in a number of positions, really, because everyone wants to play in against Samoa and hopefully beyond that from Ireland's point of view. So I think there's a better balance, certainly. I would say that has been maybe an issue in the past, and that was something we talked about pre-World Cup. But I think they've got a bang on, really, in that sense. They got weekends off during the preseason, and over here they seem to have mixed it up just about enough.
Nice one. Yeah, unfortunately we won't get to all of your questions because we have to leave Murray catch some Zeds at a certain stage. But David Cordiel has one. Given how little he had been able to feature throughout the tournament, was it a mistake to bring Carberry, or can he still justify the choice in the coming games?
I think he can probably still justify it. You did, when he got withdrawn from that Russia game, you kind of go, why is a guy who obviously had a serious, it was a serious enough injury that it required a surgical procedure to fix up, and some players take longer to come back from that. You did kind of question it, but if he's back off the bench, say, this weekend, and he shows a bit more, and the withdrawal against Russia makes sense, that, you know, let's let him get fully fit. Because to me, when he came out against Japan, there was a bit of hesitancy maybe, and he admitted himself he was rusty, understandably so. It would be so tough to expect him to get straight back up to speed. But if he plays a decent role off the bench this weekend, say, and then has a kind of telling impact in a quarter final, then, well, it justifies itself in an obvious sense. If he's involved in, say, a winning try, or if he comes on, even if it's a fullback to mix things up for Ireland when they need to change up the game, well, there you go. It can still be justified, I think.
Yeah, may I also propose that his kick to touch against Japan might wind up rescuing our entire World Cup. I'm still reticent to believe that he knew exactly what he was doing there. Like, time wise, it doesn't seem to quite add up.
He's sticking to his story. He was actually asked about it again. I thought we were kind of beyond it. Someone asked him at the press conference the other day, and he said, no, I knew what I was doing. He said it looked better that I kick it long rather than short. So yeah, he says the actual type of kick was what he meant to do. I think he did definitely mean to put it out of touch, but look, we don't know. We're not in his head. He spoke well, actually. Actually asked him about the bit where they were down the 22 and maybe could have passed to Rob Kearney. He said he didn't feel it was on. He said he felt the Japanese defender could have got to Kearney, and then he would have been potentially a bit isolated. So always interesting to hear that side and the players' thinking process in those big moments, because as we've mentioned before, we're certainly not down at pitch level with the frenetic pace of it. And it's definitely easier for people like me to look back at the highlights and the clips and watch it a few times and think, oh, he could have done better there. So he feels he's got the best ahead of him yet in this World Cup. And you would hope he can put what has been a really frustrating run of a couple of injuries behind him.
Yeah, Here's hoping. A couple more so before we leave you go, big man. Is it Davy Hyland or Davit Hyland, the way it's spelled here? Apologies to Mr. or Mrs. Hyland. Are there plans for the Ireland team to watch Japan-Scotland on Sunday? And can the media not be present to avoid seeing any Jamie Heaslip-style fist pumps if we get South Africa and not New Zealand?
Yeah, like the media certainly won't be present. No, definitely not. Yeah, I don't know what the plan is, but they'll absolutely be sitting in their, probably in their team room watching that together. Depending on what happens in the Samoa match, and then they have to kind of wait until the whole pool stages are wrapped up before they head back towards Tokyo and a possible quarterfinal. Obviously, the team hotels and all that kind of stuff logistically have to be decided up there. And there's a number of factors that go into that. But let's just hope that the Typhoon Hagibis, which looked like it was going to be initially setting for here, it now looks like it's heading for Tokyo with a lot of rain and wind. Let's just hope that it doesn't affect what should be a really good last weekend of pool stuff.
100%. And one last one. So, Andrew Wood, can you ask how hard it would be to analyse Ireland's play, as they don't seem to be really showing any hand other than off nine and the odd box kick, i.e., is the rope-a-dope theory from this group plausible?
there's probably elements of that, and we've kind of just alluded to it probably in terms of they have shown stuff off set piece, and then you tweak something or you slightly change that picture. In terms of their phase play, I think we mentioned a couple of examples against Russia where they did try and open it up and not be that one-out runner, and that's probably the bit where they need to go, because most teams are expecting them to be narrow in their phase play. And you saw Japan getting really good double tackles, having really blatantly and openly spoken about that during the week leading up to that match. Listen, we're going to put double tacklers onto every carrier and meet them that way. And they did that pretty well. Ireland did show a little bit of intricacy. Even the Carberry example I thought was a nice one, which they hadn't really used down the 22 before, where you set up a one-out carrier. It looks like he's going to smash it up, but then Conor Murray is just loitering at the back and they turn and play to him. So there are definitely options there for Ireland to open up a bit more. We've seen some of that. We've seen, say, in years gone past where they've run everything out of their own 22. They've exited with passing plays. And then it's just about Schmidt really mixing and matching and picking out the right tools, I guess, for the possible, we're saying possible quarterfinal, aren't we? Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely an element to that always, of him trying to lure people into thinking they're going to do this and then do something different.
Well, the rope-a-dope famously becomes more effective in the latter round, so we'll see how it goes over the next, well, hopefully over the next couple of weeks. Murray, we'll leave you go. Thanks a million for that.
Cheers, thanks, Mill. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. We obviously have team namings from both teams. Going to head to Samoa's presser as well as Ireland, so should have loads to talk about. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, super. We'll be joined tomorrow on the regular pod by Andy Dunn as well, I do believe. Just want to wish the best of luck to Doug Ledden from the WhatsApp group, who is going to be appearing on Nationwide on RTÉ tonight at 7 o'clock, speaking about mental health in Ireland. So I'll tune in for that, Doug, and hope it goes really well for you. And thanks to everybody else as well for your questions. Apologies to Ben. I think I missed your one on high tackle directives, but we might come back to it. Or if you want to fire it in again at any stage, please do. And thank you for listening. Have a good, what day have we? It is actually all blending into one with all these podcasts. Wednesday, I think. Have a good Wednesday, and we'll catch you tomorrow for the regular pod. Till then, take it easy.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Magic!
You're not alive, boy, so you start kicking when the room is spinning and the words and...